Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Behind the Knife, the surgery podcast, where we take a behind-the-scenes, intimate look at surgery from leaders in the field. So welcome to another episode of Behind the Knife, everybody, and we are absolutely pleased to have Dr. Antonio Lacy here, who is the head of service of GI surgery and the section chief of minimally invasive surgery at Barcelona Hospital and professor with tenure of surgery and surgical subspecialties at the University of Barcelona. Professor Lacy, thanks so much for joining us on BTK.
Thank you. Yeah.
So, obviously, me being a colorectal surgeon and being within the American Society of Colorectal Surgeons, I've had a small opportunity to get to know you, but nothing like viewing you from afar, and it's absolutely fantastic that you're able to join us here. For those of you who aren't as familiar with your work, can you tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, where you trained, and how it came to the point where you're at Barcelona right now?
Yeah, I don't know if I explain all my history. Probably, I take more than 2 hours. But anyway, I try to summarize. I born in the best island in the world, and remember that because that will be very important in my career, in my professional career. Because I born in Mallorca, it's a Mediterranean island. It's a beautiful island. And because we don't have a school of medicine, I have to move with only 17 years old to Barcelona. You know, the funny situation is I sent to the mail, you know, asking because I have, an uncle who lives in Madrid. And this one guy in the mail, you know, made a mistake. And that is the reason because I had to come to Barcelona. That's the first thing. The second thing is, I think it's quite funny because I thought I was in the third year of the university and I want to be intern of one of the schools of surgery. And in those days, I used to help one orthopedic surgeon in Mallorca during the summer. And that is the reason because I asked one of my professors, you know, to be one intern in orthopedics. And he said to me, I know everyone. You know, typical of the ego of the surgeons, I know everyone. And when we went, he committed a mistake, and we went, instead of orthopedic surgery, we went to gastrointestinal surgery. And that's probably the reason, because I'm not grew up in Madrid, and I am a gastrointestinal surgeon to this. After, you know, I make my residency in the hospital clinic in Barcelona, and I was really, really involved in those days in portal hypertension, liver diseases, and liver transplant. I went to the United States to Emory Hospitals in 1981 with one of the, my, sometimes I think I commit another mistake in my life, because my second child was born in at the beginning of December, and at the beginning of January, 1 month later, you know, I decided to go to Emory for a long time period, you know, leaving my wife and my two kids in Barcelona. After that, I moved from, because in Emory was a very good hospital, but I decided to move to San Francisco in California American Center to do pediatrics liver transplant. After that, after a year, I came to my hospital again. And due to some, let me say, political problems, I cannot start with the children's pediatrics liver transplant program. And I decided to, I was the younger of a group of liver transplant, very, very hard group. Still, it's a hard group. And I decided to move to another kind of surgery, and I started with minimally invasive surgery. And thanks to many friends around the world, very important sages for me, very important people in those days, in the early 90s, you know, I started to be in this world. After that, I went to Cleveland Clinic. I met, that is the reason because, I remember the island, because I met, for me, one of my best mentors in my life. Is Victor Fascio. He unfortunately he passed away recently. However, I remember I met him and he asked me, "Say, where are you coming from?" I say, "I'm coming from an island like you." I say, "What? Which island?" And I said, "That's similar size." He was from Australia, and he said he was really surprised because Australia. Do you think Mallorca is like Australia? Okay, if you take a look at the map, the difference is only 3-4 centimeters. But that is the reason, because immediately I started a very good relation with him. He was my mentor, and I have the opportunity to went another good thing. You see, an opportunity to go to another hospital again in Mallorca to be the chief of Mallorca. And I decided, you know, to take a plane just to ask, you know, the opinion, the big Victor's opinion. And was really funny because I was with him and his wife, his beautiful wife, talking about what is the advantage or disadvantage to go to another hospital. And at the end of the dinner, he asked me 13 times the same question. Say, if you go to this hospital, you will have the power. And I said, of course, because I will be the chief. That is not the power. You know, he asked me the same question 13 times. And I thought, this guy is so intelligent. And I have some doubt about that. But immediately I realized he's absolutely right, because he said, power is patience. And I think, you know, that is a real reason, because I am here in the Cleveland Clinic, probably Sydney, is better in terms of the Cleveland, you know, in the quality of life, etc. However, he had the patients there. And that's, I realized immediately and decided not to move to the hospital. And I think one of the main advantages, I have many patients, many people with me, and that is really important in my professional career. After that, I started with, a different programs. I'm not a typical colorectal surgeon, because I'm coming from liver transplant surgeon, and I started with many things, with the upper GI, bariatrics, etc. And now I mainly focus in colorectal, but still I'm doing quite a liver metastasis, esophageal cancer, gastric cancer, and I think it's enough.
Well, Professor Lacey, one of the other reasons we had you on is to discuss your very popular AIS channel. And for those who are not familiar, it can be found at AISchannel.com. One of the things we wanted to find out from you specifically is how did you develop the AIS channel? How did it get started? And then moving on to what's the best use for both residents and staff surgeons?
Again, I think it's important that, you know, as you said, you know, the background and the history, the personal history is very important. I remember, you know, my first time in United States, I was 18 years old in 76, is the bicentennial, and I arrived to San Francisco. And I was absolutely surprised because, you know, you can imagine a big parade, you know, starting in the airport. I was absolutely crazy. But immediately in those days, you know, in Spain, we have a horrible dictator, and it was Franco. And I have, you know, some shy to show my Spanish passport. And that was, for me, very important. Fortunately, now we are in a democratic country. However, you know, for me, this brand related with the people, and I said I used to go to many congresses, different foreign hospitals, etc. And normally, you know, the Spanish guys is not using to go to a different hospitals and congresses. That is the reason, because I thought many years after, I thought, you know, only 3% of the surgeons can move, you know, to different hospitals, congresses, to learn, to teach, you know, the different techniques and the innovation in surgery. And I thought could be a good idea to do something, you know, using the new tools like internet, streaming, etc., to make a platform absolutely free for everyone. And those days we started to do it, and I remember when I tried to explain, because we don't have money to do it, etc., and when we start, you know, to try to explain the idea, I remember one guy related with those things with TV in here in Spain say, "Do you want to make something like Facebook in surgery?" And I said, that is a good idea. And I think, you know, as you said, the difference between education around the countries is absolutely, there are very big differences. And I think we have to democratize the education around the world, you know, in particular in surgery. We started with the idea. We created a platform. With the platform we created at the beginning, you know, it's only, let me say, like a video platform, because we put only videos related with surgery. We started to do live surgeries. And now I'm very, very happy because many, many young surgeons send me many emails to my group saying, "I'm very happy because with this, you know, it's a very important related with my education in surgery, in very strange, not is the right word, is in many different places that probably is not, you know, people is talking about the United States, is talking about other countries in Europe, etc., but there are many, you know, poor countries, and we can arrive with a simple, you know, internet, and they can know what is the new innovation. We started with very complicated procedures, but now we realize it's very important, not only complicated. We started with colorectal, with bariatrics, but we wanted to have the majority of the specialties in surgery in probably in this year maximum before spring 2018. I think you are absolutely right, but that was one of the ideas. It's one of the verticals of the AIS. However, when I was in Oscars last year, you know, maybe let me say only 10% of the people knows, you know, this platform. When I was in Seattle, probably more than 90% of the people, as you know exactly what is AIS, and I think it's important. That is the term related with education. But we are creating many different things to try to facilitate, you know, the way to learn to teach techniques. We created, for example, you know, we call AIS director. You can choose the camera do you want to see. Minimum is 4 or 5 cameras during an operating theater, and you can choose. You know, the single surgeon can choose okay, I wanted to see what is the how you put the trochus into the abdomen. That means the sternal view, or they can choose the internal view at the same time, charging all the time. And the other time we created something for me is quite important, is the AIS Mentor. You know, with your iPhone and a simple iPad, I can be connected with a very inexpensive tool. I can be connected with not me. You see, the surgeon is supposed to be the leader in this kind of surgery, can be connected with many different hospitals and can not proctor, but can mentor how can the other surgeons has they can then do the surgery. Another important thing is now we are working really hard in virtual reality and augmented virtual reality. You know, we have with the support of one of the big industry related dedicated to this, and we created like a Netflix in surgery, and at the same time that is behind because we created a virtual reality. And you can enter in the real patient like you normally do with you can play is like a game, and that could be very important. It's like a kind of simulation. And I think we have become, I think, let me say, because I'm very proud with my team, you know, the most popular platform in the world in surgical education.
So I want to touch on that last point that you made, talking about virtual reality and simulation. One of the things that the American Board of Colorectal Surgery and some other boards out there are talking about is how do we incorporate some of the more advanced, maybe high technology type things into an examination, and whether it can be good enough to get a high stakes examination. You've already seen how far that the AIS channel has come in a relatively short time period. Do you think virtual reality and simulation will ever get to the point where not only it's just an education, but it's also as a part of an examination or a certification?
Yeah, that's very important. Again, it's excellent questions because, say, when we started with the minimally invasive surgery, I remember in the World Congress in Bordeaux in 1992, people start to talk about try to compare, you know, the simulation that they normally do the pilots with airplanes. You know, it's more than 25 years later, people is still talking the same thing. The main difference between a pilot in an airplane and a surgeon in a theater is mainly is because the pilot can have, I don't know, you know, I'm absolutely not expert, but maybe they can have 20, 25 different situations, absolutely control the majority of them. In surgery, it's absolutely different. You know, the main difference between one patient, another patient, one tumor, another tumor, is absolutely, you cannot, you know, be like a pilot. That is probably the main reason, because simulation in surgery is very, very difficult. Probably the project related with airplanes, you know, they have more economical support than the economical support they have the surgeons. However, in virtual reality, you can probably in September, maybe you can have the first prototype to do a real surgery, you know, one technique in a simple like a game, but not like simulator that we have in the market that looks like, you know, let me say it looks like not really, it looks fake. You know, that is a real, it's absolutely real patient with real surgery. But at the same time, you mentioned, what about credentials? Say, AIS Channel thought many things because AIS Channel is a platform, is a free, absolutely free for education. However, if you wanted to certificate, you know, of course, we need to have, you know, economical background about that, and we created the Kairos. Kairos is something related with AIS Channel, but it's some kind of accreditation for different people. At the moment, we have 27 courses and in different specialties, and we will, of course, you know, implement virtual reality in these kind of courses.
Professor Lacey, I was just a little curious about the live surgeries that you do. I see there's a training session coming up in about 7 days on ileostomy closure training for residents. Can you talk about how you guys perform, you know, video this in on a live operation? And have you guys ever had any times where it's gotten a little scary being live and having it, you know, thousands of people watching?
Yeah, that is, you know, we discuss many things with different hospitals, different managers, hospitals, different, even different lawyers and patients and ethical committees. Because could you imagine, you know, we do many different surgeries, very complicated in a life. However, we try to follow that something that I learned very well when one of the big guys in minimally invasive surgery, one of the fathers, is Sir Alfred Cuscieri. I remember Alfred Cuscieri, long time ago, explained, if you do a live surgery in a different hospital that you normally work, that is very, very common in our job, the number of complications can increase in 25%. That's, you know, the consequence is, okay, if you wanted to do a live surgery, it's much better to do a live surgery in your hospital with your team. And that is the, you know, that is the principle that we follow. And you're right, probably thousand and thousand. The last one was a resident, you know, making a simple knee sim procedure. And they have more than 16,000 people connected watching the surgery. However, no problem. Why? Because it's our job and you can do it. In legal aspect, we, of course, the patient knows everything, signs everything. All the surgeries is presented in our ethical committee. And I think we the only, and that's never a patient reject or didn't give us the permission to do the live surgery. Because they understand immediately that is good for the education in surgery. And that is, I think, is a good idea. And many, many hospitals around the world is doing. More than 60% of our live surgeries is in other hospitals. It is not in our hospital. You know, they are, you know, we came from, I don't know, 20, 30 different hospitals in Europe. You know, many hospitals in South America, hospitals in China, in Japan, in many places.
Have you run into any issues with you know, people not wanting to participate for fear of you know, if there were a complication in one of these surgeries, and now all of a sudden there's, you know, video evidence and it was witnessed by 16,000 people? Has that been a challenge, or has anybody expressed concerns about that?
No, because it's quite simple. Because you know, if one hospital choose one surgical technique and one patient to do it, normally, you know, in 100% of the cases, they are experts in this kind of surgery, and if they are experts, they can do it. Let me say the only problem that we have in some hospitals. Probably more than a year ago, is something related with the technical. Technical mean audiovisual, you know, tools to make a good transmission. The majority of not, because could you imagine? You say, okay, if you are the best, you know, singer about opera in the world, for years, it's not important to make a live performance in front of the 20,000 people. Is no problem at all, because they are professionals and they can do excellent, because they do these kind of procedures. We never accept, you know, a crazy guy trying to increase the egos through our platform.
So we'll switch gears here a little bit now and talk a little bit about minimally invasive surgery in general. You've obviously been extremely productive with probably over 200 publications, high impact factors, major journals. And I want to walk back to the time, your 2002 paper in The Lancet, looking at laparoscopic assisted colectomy versus open colectomy for non-metastatic colon cancer. You know, one of the first randomized controlled trials on this topic. And, you know, you guys found something that, you know, others hadn't to date. And especially at that time, finding that laparoscopy wasn't just the same as open colectomy for colon cancer, but in fact, that it may actually, patients may ultimately do a little bit better in terms of not only morbidity and hospital stay, but in terms of tumor recurrence and cancer-related survival. Can you take a little bit into your thoughts about that particular paper? I remember reading it as a resident and thinking, wow, where do we go from here? And did you get any, what was the type of feedback to that? And what was the response to people when they contacted you about that particular paper?
Yeah, again, I'm very happy with this question because you have to probably, when you were resident, however, you remember the real reason because laparoscopy stopped in oncology patients is because was a paper published, you know, with 12 colorectal cancer operated by laparoscopy and 3 porn-side metastases. That was, you know, sometimes it's easier to publish a negative paper than positive paper. Immediately was a perfect excuse for the majority of people without experience in laparoscopy, you know, excuse to stop immediately the technique. You know, as you said, it was the first randomized trial published. The only problem is a single center randomized trial. It's not a multi-center randomized trial like the other trials, like COST, the American trial, the COLOR one, the European trial. Our trial, we found differences only in stage 3 cancer patients. And many people, I received more than 100 different questions to try to, what would you think is the reason? Because at those this time, we thought, say, maybe it's in immunological response, maybe it's many things. However, many people either don't believe that, say why you have better results in the stage 3. Okay, now I think it's easy to answer, because if you come back now to the COLOR 2 trial, it's campaign rectal cancer laparoscopy versus open, the alphas, I mean, I'm one of the alphas of this paper too, say we found the same results in a stage 3 cancer patients comparing laparoscopy and open. The answer is quite easy. In a stage 1 and a stage 2, it's not really, really important because you can do open surgery very well and you can do also laparoscopy. However, in more, you know, staging 3 is a more aggressive tumors, you know, probably is one of the advantages to use minimally invasive surgery. But in the other way, you know, talking about randomized trials, again, we have a meeting with one of the biggest surgeons in France, is Brice Gaillet, Sir Alfred Cruchieri, I think was also another German surgeon, and myself, you know, trying to make a multi-center randomized trial comparing colorectal cancer laparoscopy versus open. And I remember the advice of Sir Albert Cruchieri said, you know, why not you didn't choose, you know, the right surgeons in the right places, in the right hospitals, and each surgeon can do, they normally do best. If you go to Professor Hohenberger, for example, in Germany, they can do an excellent right colectomies, total colectomies by open approach. And you can do the same thing by laparoscopy. That is not real a randomized trial. But that is probably one of the answers to try to demonstrate, okay, we did the same than colon in rectum. And now you have the COLOR 2 trial and the Korean trial, they are two trials with non-inferiority trials. That means laparoscopy is not superior, is non-inferior to open. However, there are two trials, the Alacrant trial and the American trial. The answer to non-inferiority was no. That means probably at the moment is still the standard procedure is the open approach in the majority, at least 70% of the patients around the world. And that is probably the reason, because we can't introduce, you know, something that we wanted to demonstrate in a campaign, rectal cancer, open laparoscopy, robotic, or transanal.
So sticking along these lines, you know, not only were you a pioneer on these minimally invasive approaches, but you continue to be a pioneer when it comes to NOTES surgery. And for those that aren't familiar, it's the natural orifice transluminal endoscopic surgery. We wanted to talk to you a little bit about what's the current state of NOTES surgery? Where do you see the application, and how close are we to, you know, having, you know, pure NOTES as, you know, a legitimate option?
Okay, I like the question. You know, as you know, again, in the United States, the group of NOSCA started with the NOTES. It's at the beginning of the ideas, you know, immediately say when Reddick take out the appendix through the mouth, you know, many people is talking about that is will be the future, and again, many people is involved. Say, okay, that's you know, could be. However, the moment is to do a pure notes is I think it's too difficult. Probably in some cases is not the you know, the solution. Okay, immediately NOSCA, you know, Euronotes in Europe created a group to try to do, for example, you know, the gallbladder, you know, starting trying to compare laparoscopy with the cholecystectomy through the mouth and through the vagina. We started to do these kind of procedures. We do a couple of cases of through the mouth, taking out the gallbladder. However, for us, it's too complicated because you can make a procedure in 20 minutes. You can say, now it's so complicated, you have to enter into the mouth to do a flexible endoscopy, to make a hole into the stomach, to do the surgery with the view is not as excellent that you normally do in a minimally invasive in laparoscopy. Okay, we started to do a vaginal approach, and we started to do a sigmoid cancer. We made this the first sigmoid cancer through the vagina. The main problem with the vagina is that we have many problems sometimes in the hospital with people is against to make because, you know, more important, people is talking about dyspareunia after these kind of procedures. Nobody demonstrated this. There are some experience in Germany with more than 1,000 cases of gallbladders. However, the main problem is one surgery for only 50% of the population because, of course, related with the gender. And that is the reason because, okay, with the experience of the vaginal approach, with the notes, we decided to go to the another natural orifice, is the anus, is 100% of the population, and we started to do in rectal cancer cases. We have the opportunity. I met one of the, you know, fantastic and generous ladies, a surgeon around the world, is Pat Sheila, my friend. And Pat accepted to came to Barcelona to do the first rectal cancer through the transanally, through natural orifices. It's a hybrid procedure because we do a mini laparoscopy at the same time. And we did the case in 2009. And since then, we started trying to work really hard. And now we have more than 400 cases performed by the rectal or transanal approach.
Great. This leads in perfectly to our tips and tricks. We recently met with some of the program directors of the ASCARS committee, and they were saying that the transanal TME was one of the hottest topics at this year's ASCARS. And they were saying it's also much more widely performed in Europe and specifically at your center. I was hoping you could just take us through patients that you would consider for a transanal TME, the benefits and the risks and limitations of this surgery, and where you see it going in the future.
Yeah, now since, okay, we did the first case with Fashila in the hospital in 2009. We made another couple of cases, but we decided because we thought it's quite complicated. We came back to the lab, we came back to the cadavers, and we changed a little, you know, the technique. And since November 2011, that means almost 6 years, all the cases in rectal cancer, in other, because we increase the indications, but all rectal cancers, in low rectum, mid rectum, high rectum, we do normally transanally. And that is since, as I said, since almost 6 years, we expanded, you know, the indication not only for rectal cancer. Now we do in Hammer vessel, we do in all IBDs, we do on all familial polyposis, we do in all complication, we do in complicated cases like leaks, like sinus, chronic sinus, etc. We use this approach. We think it's easier, and we think it's because we, since after 41 cases, we started to make the procedure in two teams. We decided to put, instead of to put the name of surgeon, we decided to put the name of our animal, a beautiful lion. It's a sessile approach, and that means we work together, two teams at the same time. The majority of hospitals in Europe and even in the United States are doing this technique. The majority of them, more than 75%, is using the two teams approach. And that is safer for the patient, quicker, because you can do the procedures in less than 2 hours in the majority of cases. And that, I think, is quite good for patients. Another time I commit another mistake. When we started with a standardized procedure in 2011, I thought and I said, you know, in less than 3-5 years, 50% of the rectal cancer will be operated by this approach. And again, another mistake in my life, because it's not, you know, many people are really interested. However, the majority of hospitals is using that only in selected cases.
Well, the one thing that came up, Professor Lacey, that talking to people at the ASCARS meeting was, and one of the questions with the transanal DME is, how do you avoid injury to the urethra? How do you find the correct plane in this dissection?
Yeah, that is a good question, because before this approach, always when the surgeon make another approach, always they increase, you know, some complication, or maybe they have a new complication. But remember, go to the history. It's very important. When they started with the laparoscopic cholecystectomy, is nobody make a randomized trial. Why not? Because the patient immediately realized this, and they prefer and they ask to be operated with a keyhole surgery instead of a big incision, like Marilyn Monroe had. And in those days, you know, one of the main problems was, you know, infection of the belly bottom. And at the same time, the injuries of common bile duct increase a lot around the world. Now we have a new approach. It's a new anatomy. And many people is talking about urethral injury. You know, my feeling is probably in the near future, nobody will talk about the urethral injury. Because it's, let me say, it's quite complicated to make a urethral injury, because the urethra is not immediately above the rectum, the plane. You have to dissect the prostate, and after when you dissected the prostate, you can cut the urethra. That is the reason, because you have to be careful, try to find the plane, try to find the embryological plane of the mesorectum. And, for example, in our experience, we have a case, a very complicated, tough case, you know, with a previous radiochemotherapy, a big tumor, probably at the beginning of the series, and we have the video, and we dissect quite well, you know, the prostate. But since then, more than 400 cases, we never make an injury into the urethra. Probably urethral injury is because many people, you know, you say that is more common in one hospital than another, one surgeon than others. You say like see one, teach one, make one and teach one. Say probably people is not well trained, started to do the technique without experience, and that is probably the reason, like in laparoscopic cholecystectomy, you know, we have more injuries in the urethra.
Excellent. Thank you, Professor Lacey. Well, that leads us into what we call our final five, and this is how we'd like to end you know, most of our interviews. Five quick, simple, easy questions that help us get to know, and our listeners get to know you a little bit better. So first question of the final five, do you listen to music in the operating room? And if you listen to music in the operating room, what kind of music do you listen to?
Yeah, that is very important for me because music is something you can be more relaxed. And at the same time, I hate to hear voices, people chatting in the operating room. The type of music that we normally use is classic in the majority of cases. And if I have to choose one, you know, again, coming to Mallorca, I like very much Chopin.
Do you guys have Taylor Swift in Spain? That's Dr. Steele's favorite music generally. But
always.
Professor Lacey, number two, do you have any hobbies or talents outside of the operating room?
Yes, my hobby, as I was you know, a tennis player, and now fortunately, because I played better tennis than I used to play golf. That is very difficult to play golf, more difficult than to do surgery.
I think that too often. Question number three, is there a favorite trip or vacation that you've taken recently?
Let me say my favorite trip is since we had an important problem in our life, we used to make minimum two trips with my family, with my wife and my two kids to different places, and that is the ideal situation. But it's a simple. I just came from Mallorca to spend the weekend, and I think it was extraordinary. You know, I think the most important is not the place to go. The most important is with whom you are going to these different places.
Number four, if you weren't to do medicine at all, what would you be doing?
Probably, you know, if I, you know, I used to say, if I born again, if I have, you know, some qualities to make something related with artists, that means music, painter or something, I would do it. If not, I come back to surgery. Remember, when I was 7 years old, people is asking to me, what do you want it to be when you are you know, big, when you are adult? And I used to say surgeon. He said not physician. Or said I wanted to be surgeon, but probably I think it's much better to be you know, a musician or something like this.
Okay, number five. So if you could go back in time and meet yourself on your very first day of your surgical internship, what one piece of advice would you give yourself?
Again, as Big said to me, you know, the most important in your professional career is not only papers, reputation, you know, congresses, everything related with, again, with the ego. The most important is your patients. And I used to say, you need to treat your patients like you want it to be treated, but if you are the patient. Remember the movie, The Doctor, from William Hurt, who was a cardiac surgeon without any respect to the patients. And after, when he has a cancer, you know, immediately he changed the way to make medicine.
Well, Professor Lacey, we can't thank you so much for taking the time to join us here on Behind the Knife. Obviously, just very fascinating in some of the innovation that you've done. You've been truly a pioneer in the global world of surgery, and we cannot thank you for sharing kind of the history about how some of this happened and then what the future has to hold. So from all of us, thank you on Behind the Knife.
Thank you so much. It was a real, you know, honor to me to answer your extraordinary questions. And thank you to the opportunity to try to explain a little bit about my life.
And we look forward to joining in on the live surgeries on the AIS channel. Thanks again, Professor Lacey.
Okay, we will see you soon.
Until next time, dominate the day.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.